Welcome to the Talk with Erin Stock podcast. I am your host, Erin Stock, a National Board Certified Teacher and Educational Coach. This podcast will provide you with actionable strategies, teaching tips, and creative ideas inspiring you to foster the most successful and engaging learning environment possible. Whether this is in your home, your classroom, or an entire school, let's partner together and keep students at the core of learning. Now put on your listening ears and let's get started. Intro music written and performed by Tony Gofredi, recorded by Brad Piper. Editing done by yours truly. Hello, and welcome to Talk with Erin Stock, the show that fosters and inspires the most mindful and engaging learning environment possible. I'm your host, Erin Stock, and today we're going to talk about part one of a two-part series on how to choose the best learning environment for your child. In this first part, I'm going to discuss a variety of different schools that you can choose to send your child to. In the second part, I'll go into a deeper discussion about the questions to ask and exactly what to look for when you're searching for the right school. I want to start in this session with also letting you know about two major components of how you can determine if a school is going to be the right fit for you and your child. This is the first episode of Talk with Erin Stock, so I welcome all of you and thank you for being here. Why did I choose this podcast to be the first podcast that I released? I will tell you that the number one question I get asked as an educator is, how do I know what school is right for my child? And this actually is a pretty loaded question. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go through a couple of different options that you have for schools that you can choose for your child to attend, kind of describe the difference between a public and a private school. Then we'll get to the two ways that you know you have chosen the right school for your child. And I also want to make a note real quick about teachers. This information is something that you can keep in mind when you are deciding where you want to apply to teach. I understand that we are in a situation right now with the pandemic that is going to make these decisions a little bit more difficult. We don't know what the next school year is going to bring. We don't know what schedules are going to look like. We don't know how schools are going to reframe their days next coming weeks, the next coming months, in the next coming couple of years. If you are one of the lucky ones who actually have had your child go to school this year, I am not one of those. I'm a little bitter about it right now. Your school is probably already putting things in place that they will go ahead and follow through on in the coming year. If your child has not yet attended school, there's still a lot of unknowns, and there's actually a lot of unknowns for everybody. What I'm going to go through right now is just a general list of things that you want to consider when you are thinking about what type of school to send your child to. Now, I'm not just going to talk about things to consider if your child is just starting out in school. I'm not talking about just nursery school. I'm not talking about just preschool. I'm not just talking about kindergarten. I am talking about, in general, what do you need to look for when you are choosing a school for any age of child? Teenager, high schooler, middle schooler, elementary kid, anybody out there. This could be due to a move that your family has, a situation that is going on currently in your child's school that you're not happy with. If your school district has school of choice, which is something that we'll also talk about, there's a lot of different options here, so I just want you to keep an open mind. I'm speaking very generally here. I also want to note that I am not going to list every kind of school that is out there available to you because we would be here all day. The list is quite lengthy. I just picked a few that I thought were some that either maybe you weren't quite familiar with that you wanted just a little bit more information on, or some that you had kind of heard of but didn't know much about, or if you just were looking for a general idea of some of the differences between public, private, charter schools, magnet schools, those types of things. Again, for teachers out there, if you are in a position where you are thinking about applying to a new school, or if you are thinking about looking at changing schools, or if you are just starting out, you might find some information here that could be helpful for you too, or even for your own kids or students if parents are asking for some guidance in how to choose the right school. To begin, I want to let you know that almost every school can be categorized into the public or private category based on how they are funded. So there's a difference between public and private school funding. Public schools are funded by the government, and private schools are funded through something else. It could be a nonprofit or a for-profit organization. It could be a local church. It could be somebody from the community who just decided to open up their own school. There are a lot of different ways that private schools are funded. Public schools, they're funded by local, state, and federal government funds, which can vary from state to state. This is not the same across the board. And I want to let you know that this is something that I address quite frequently. I have lived in several different states. Funding for schools varies just as much as it does for a lot of things from state to state. So please keep that in mind. According to the U.S. Department of Education, only about 8% of traditional education funding comes from the federal government. The rest of it comes from the local and state budget. Teachers have to be specifically licensed in public schools, and the requirements, although similar, may vary by state. And this is so true, again, after moving from state to state. There's different requirements and qualifications that states have, and while they are very similar, a lot of licenses are not reciprocal. So I can't just go and say, well, I'm going to go get a job in California, and because I have a license in the state of Delaware, I can go ahead and just transfer it. That's not the way that it works. So if a teacher lives in one state and teaches in another, they must apply for a new license in that state that they will teach in. Public schools must abide by certain curriculums, policy, and governance, which is mostly decided at the state and local level. These days, there's a lot more federal regulations that are happening in schools, but still the majority, the curriculum, is by state and local levels. Some states pay teachers across the board all the same. There's a state salary for public schools, while others allow districts to set their own salary budgets, which means that they can compete with one another to try to pay teachers more. And this is something that is also misunderstood sometimes. Most states have a set standard of where teachers have to start. Depending on how the local district is set up, they could add an additional stipend to that or an additional salary to that. You want to definitely look into several districts in that state so that you can compare the salaries. Those are public schools. That's how public schools are funded. Charter schools are possibly one of the most misunderstood types of schools out there. They are free, but parents usually have to apply and spaces are limited. So they're similar to private schools, but they fall under the public school category. Any company, organization, individual can apply for a charter to open a charter school. If the state grants the charter, then they will receive a certain amount of funding for a limited period of time. This is usually between 3 to 5 years. If the school fails to meet performance expectations, their charter is not renewed and the school has to be closed. Now, there's a lot of politics involved in this, so again, I'm just keeping this very general. Charter schools usually choose a specialization or a mission statement that meets a need of their community. A lot of them are community-based, such as focusing on arts or specializing in science or other STEM or STEAM areas of study, which is science, technology, engineering, math, and art. Teachers and administrators at charter schools have more authority to make decisions than most traditional public schools, and the cost of that freedom is that they still must perform. So even though they're choosing what type of curriculum to use, how to assess their kids, they still have to meet a certain standard in order to keep their charter. Parents also tend to play a bigger role in the decision-making process at charter schools and are sometimes required to volunteer more throughout the year. This happens a lot in public schools, especially now, but in charter schools, there usually comes a requirement for parents to volunteer a certain amount of time throughout the year. If charter schools have been around for a while, that's pretty much a proven track record of success. So they're at least meeting the performance requirements. It doesn't necessarily mean that they're performing higher than the public school, but it does mean that they have sustained progress. The one major difference between a charter school and a public school, too, though, is the salaries for teachers. Salaries vary. Some charter schools offer performance-based pay incentives. And there's also a possibility that teachers in charter schools do not have a teaching license, but they may have real-world experiences. They may come from backgrounds with computer programming, engineering, or even trade careers. If you're getting worried about, you know, oh gosh, I don't know if a charter school is right because the teachers may not be certified to be teaching. They may not be certified as far as the state goes, but they could be teaching something that they actually are an expert at. So don't disregard the fact that they may not be a licensed teacher, just kind of something that you want to ask some questions about. Another type of school that you could consider is a magnet school. Magnet schools specialize in certain areas, similar to some charter schools, but you will definitely find one main area of focus. This could be technology, immersion programs, the arts, or again, STEM or STEAM. The biggest difference between a charter school and a magnet school is the competition to get in. Usually, magnet schools are sometimes seen as an elite school or a school for gifted and talented. And again, please remember, I'm speaking generally here, not every magnet school. I'm just speaking in general. And this competition brings a highly selective edge to the admissions process and may sometimes include rigorous testing. So unlike a charter school where there sometimes is a waiting list to get in, there's usually not testing to get in. At magnet schools, this is a big possibility. On the other hand, some magnet schools admit students through a lottery system, allowing any student who wants to attend be admitted if they are selected. Now, I do want to touch on that lottery real quick because you'll hear a lot of talk about lotteries for different types of schools. Sometimes there are schools that have, say, immersion programs that are part of their regular everyday public school. And if you want your child to attend this immersion program, your child is put into a lottery. That basically means exactly what it sounds like. It means that when it comes time to selecting the kids for next year's program, they basically put all the names in a hat and they pick out a certain amount of number of kids, and those are the kids who are selected for the program. Sometimes this is a fair way to do it. Sometimes it really kind of doesn't necessarily keep the kids mixed up or as diverse as they could be. But just keep that in mind that that is a possibility for magnet schools. According to Magnet Education, magnet schools make the extra effort to create a sense of classroom and school community. Curriculum is also a clear and transparent for families so they can be more fully engaged in the learning of their students. Next type of school, the public virtual online school. Now, I don't want anybody to get confused because aren't we all in virtual online learning now, or haven't we all experienced that? Yes, but keep in mind that before the pandemic happened, most school districts, most public school systems did offer an online program already. And this is a program where students can select this themselves. They offered options to parents and students that would still be considered a public school with the same teacher credential requirements, academic assessments, and management as a traditional school. They're more flexible and there's more of a freedom of scheduling. They are customized to each student. And there's a big difference between what that was and then what happened when the pandemic hit. When the pandemic hit, there was really no customization. It was basically, we need to learn how to do online learning. We need to get this distance learning thing down. We need to get this out to all of our kids all at the same time. There wasn't a lot of modifications being made. It wasn't really customized. But these types of virtual online learning programs that school districts already had in place, those are different than what we saw during the pandemic. Those are more like kind of similar, I guess, to what you would think of as a homeschooling curriculum. If you do have a child who has been flourishing and thriving in online learning, but you feel that they need just a little bit more attention, individualized attention, the online program through your school district might be an option for you to look into. And I honestly believe that more and more school districts are going to offer these types of programs because there are now so many parents out there who have seen how flexible distance learning can be. They have seen how their student may perform a lot better through a program like this. So it's definitely something to keep in mind if this has been working for you and your family. Those are the types of public schools that I covered, just basically a general public school, charter schools, magnet schools, and a public virtual or online school. I'm going to move into private schools now. just to cover some general information about private schools. Private schools are not funded by the government and do not have to follow a national curriculum. They might be run, as I mentioned before, by a nonprofit or a for-profit business. Some of them might be run by private foundations or religious denominations. In most cases, funding for the school comes just from the students. So the parents pay the tuition, the kids attend the school, and that's how the school gets their money. That's why so many tuitions are set and vary vastly, because they charge what they need to charge to basically pay their teachers, keep their buildings running, get supplies, and they want to be very competitive. So they're looking for the most qualified teachers. Sometimes, depending on where you live, may depend on how much you're paying. So they do vary across the board. Some different types of private schools that I'm going to talk about, you might think, oh my gosh, there's no way I would ever pay for that. But there are benefits to private schools over public schools. And I also want you to keep in mind that if you really do feel that a private school is the right choice for your child, but you financially don't feel you can cover it, keep in mind that a lot of private schools offer tuition assistance, payment programs, and even scholarships. So when you're looking for schools, don't totally disregard a school because you think financially it's not something that you can afford. Make sure you look into these things. One type of a private school is a boarding school, which to me seems like such an old school thing to do. But after living abroad for a little while and meeting people from different countries, I think this is just something that a lot of American families are not familiar with, or it's just something that we don't, it's not really big here in America, or it's honestly something that I think of as only people with, you know, deep pockets can afford to send their kids to. According to bestschools.org, a boarding school is a thriving community of scholars, athletes, and artists. So a lot of times families send their kids there so they'll excel in certain things if they are very much into performing arts or musical arts, or if they are very athletic and they're looking for a competitive league all year round, or just leadership, training, discipline. Lots of different things can happen at boarding schools. Most of the time, the students do have to live on campus, and they are intended to go beyond academics, so forming deeper relationships with the faculty and fellow students through extracurricular activities. Most of the time, the teachers, the educators, they do live on the same campus as the students, so that helps form the relationships with them. They are very family-oriented in a way because the students are not around their families all the time. So that's one type of thing to keep in mind. A second type of private school is a language immersion school. Now, I'm specifically putting this under private schools because this is a specific school for an immersion program that you would pay for your student to attend to learn another language. These days, there are so many immersion programs offered in the public school system that might be something that you want to look into first. These schools immerse their students in a second language, completely immerse them. Bilingual teachers teach their classes in the second language to varying degrees, so it varies how much of the day is in the second language. Generally, the programs are designed for students whose native language is English. And I think sometimes that's a misconception too. Like, sometimes I think people think the immersion programs are for if somebody's already speaking a second language. They actually are focused on native English speakers totally looking to be immersed in another language. Schools might have total immersion, partial immersion, so 50% of the day, or two-way immersion, where equal emphasis is given to English and non-English language. So that also varies. The one thing that I did find interesting about the language immersion schools is that achievement tests in these schools are most likely administered in English. So despite how much the kids are learning in the other language, their standardized assessments are still given in English. Montessori schools are another private school option. Montessori schools are kind of a hot topic with me. I really have mixed feelings about Montessori schools, and even more so now that we lived in Italy, which is the birthplace of Montessori. I really believe that early childhood education is mostly about play, but there's some structure to it, and there's some discipline that goes along with that, and I don't mean discipline in a negative way. There's positive reinforcement that goes along with that structure, and there's nurturing, and there's a rich learning environment. But what I mean by discipline is just learning how to sit on the carpet, learning how to walk in a line. Those things that when you get into a public school system, those are the things that we do in the public school system. At Montessori schools, there is kind of a bit of a freedom to allow kids to decide what they want to be learning, when they want to be learning it, how they learn it, which in many ways is great because you're building independence, which is something that is also super important in early childhood development. As somebody who is basically on that public school system mind, they're still a little difficult for me to totally endorse. To tell you a little bit more about them is that the teachers definitely honor the individuality of the child. The teacher prepares the classroom, inviting children to explore and learn through hands-on activities. The emphasis is really put on exploration. Children are encouraged to question and experience the joy of discovering the world through their classroom experiences. They do say that the curriculum is well-rounded, covering math, language, science, as well as sensory-based subjects, which sensory-based subjects are everything that go along with your senses. Taste, touch, smell, hear, see. Those are all heavily represented in Montessori programs, which is wonderful. They are designed to be three-year communities, so a lot of times each teacher has the same kids for 3 years. This allows the teachers to build relationships with the students and their families and to really personalize and deepen the student material. Once they get those relationships built with their kids, they can really dig deeper into what the students need to be learning, and they really know their kids. This is something that I really do like about Montessori. I really do like how it is very explorative. I like how it's very sensory oriented. And I also really like that the teachers stay with the kids. It's so super important, especially when they're young. Montessori schools are really great for kids who know how to kind of not think on their own, but they really thrive in an exploratory environment. I really have not given my opinion on all of these types of schools, but I will say this about Montessori. If you have a child who needs a lot of discipline, who needs a lot of structure, who needs a schedule and a routine, which can be a lot of kids, Montessori schools may not be the best option. Now, the other thing that you can always consider is sending your child to a Montessori school for early childhood, so up until kindergarten, possibly maybe even up until first grade, and then moving them into a different learning environment, depending on the child. If they are thriving in that Montessori school, then you might think that it's the best place for them to be. But if they are really struggling, if the teacher is constantly contacting you and letting you know that they're having some difficulty with behaviors and things, it could simply be because of the classroom environment. Keep that in mind if you are considering Montessori. One thing that I do want to talk about with private schools that I would encourage parents to keep in mind, and even teachers who are considering looking at private schools. Private schools are not required to have special education programs, which means that if your child has an IEP or a 504 plan, an IEP is an individualized education plan, if they have a 504, which mainly specifically works on behaviors and some other educational needs, but mostly behaviors, ADD, ADHD, those kinds of challenges, then one thing that I want you to keep in mind is that private schools do not have to offer these programs. They don't have to offer support for students that have special needs. There are schools, though, that are private special education schools. So there are schools out there that do actually specialize in behavior programs. There are a lot more autistic schools popping up, schools that are focusing on autism. There are other schools that are starting to open that are really focused on high need students, students who do not necessarily flourish in a regular classroom setting, perhaps students who have anxiety, who have nervous breakdowns, children, middle school children, or high school students that struggle with mental health. There are more and more programs that are starting to focus on these areas of need. My personal opinion is that there's not enough of them. I do truly believe that we are in the middle of a mental health crisis with the pandemic. And my hope is that not only will more of these schools start popping up, that they are not going to be just private, but I'm really hoping that the public school systems will put programs in place that will address the social and emotional needs of students and those that have special needs. I am a firm believer in inclusion, which means that any child is capable of learning in a regular classroom setting. They just have to have the support that they need to be successful. I'm going to talk a lot about that in many, many episodes to come, but I just wanted to throw out there that private schools do not necessarily have to offer special education programs. There are some, like I said, where teachers and staff are highly informed and tuned into the specific needs of the population, and they are highly trained in the specific needs of the population. They have certain certificates, certifications, and licenses. So just keep in mind that sometimes, though, your child may still thrive in a public school system just as long as you are advocating for those supports that they need. Another type of school is a parochial school, which is a religious private school that receives funding from a local church. It's partnered with a specific church, so the funding completely comes from that church. And it must turn to the students to increase the tuition, so the money doesn't come from anywhere except for the church. The difference between that and a religious school is that the religious school has to have a religious affiliation, Lutheran or Methodist. They can set their own standards, unlike parochial schools. Parochial schools have to go along with whatever religion they are a part of. So if it's a Catholic school, they have to follow that curriculum. Religious schools don't necessarily have to do that. For example, there could be a Christian school in the neighborhood that might be sponsored by a Methodist church, but it doesn't necessarily belong to the Methodist church. So you don't have to belong to a church in order to attend the school. And then there's a Reggio Emilia school, which also originated in Italy. This one is a bit difficult to explain, but basically they go off of emotional documentation and affirmation of many different kinds of competency. So that basically, I know that was a lot of words, but they really look at the emotional growth in a child, and they basically decide if a child is growing through their social and emotional progress. They believe that every child has 100 languages, is what the founder, Loris Malaguzzi, believes. The kids have extraordinary potential. They document moments of learning, emotion, and expression, and they don't necessarily assess the kids. So it's a different type of learning and a different type of an approach to the school environment. The last private school that I'm going to talk about is a Waldorf school, which is a very kind of fascinating school that I learned more about in my research. The first 7 years at a Waldorf school focus on early childhood development and physical engagement, and the next 7 years are dedicated to emotional development that engages imagination. After 14 years old, it's purely intellectual material that comes into play. So they really focus on a lot of play, social and emotional needs, interaction. I honestly want to say that the Waldorf school sounded kind of funky. Curriculum was kind of a bit out there. It was kind of a stretch for me. But when I really started reading into it, it really was basically just nurturing a child as a child and then starting the learning process and then diving into curriculum. And it actually became quite interesting. And I also found that 94% of Waldorf graduates go on to college compared to only 66% of high school graduates outside of the Waldorf movement. And a teacher remains in the class for 5 to 8 years, so similar to a Montessori school. But this one, you're going to find that they are there for longer, which to me is even better. Those relationships that they build with the kids, those are super important. And the longer that you can stay with a kid, the better the outcome, I believe, is going to be without having to transition from teacher to teacher. So a Waldorf school might be something that's good for your child if they are similar to what I explained for Montessori. If your child is really into exploring and you're really into the idea of having them develop in a total immersive environment, working on specific ideals, then a Waldorf school might be something that you could consider. The last and final type of school that you could always consider is homeschooling. I am going to actually save the homeschooling for another episode because I think that it is something worth having a long conversation about. I used to never consider homeschooling as an option, but I met somebody when we were overseas who has been homeschooling for many years and is doing an amazing job. It's actually a pretty enticing option. So I do want to hold off on talking all about homeschooling for right now because I also think that there are a lot of people out there who are thinking, are you crazy? I'm not going to homeschool during this time. I've been homeschooling for the last year, and it is so different than what we have been doing in distance learning. I will save that for another episode. I know I kind of went through those fast and I didn't go into too much detail with them because we are at that point where we have reached what the two most important things to keep in mind are when you are choosing a school for your child. First and foremost, you don't actually choose the school for your child. Your child does. And I know that's probably not mind-blowing to anybody out there, but that is the honest-to-goodness truth. That is what is going on. When you go to choose a school for your child, you have to know your child. You have to know what your child needs. Is your child in a position where they are capable of learning a second language? Have they been dealing with so many things that learning a second language would just be an added stress to them? They might think it sounds really cool. They might think it sounds really great. But are they really in a position to take that on? Is your child flourishing and thriving in all of their studies, and adding a second language would be something that would be challenging to them, would be something that would encourage them to continue to get better at? Those are things to keep in mind when considering any type of school. You also want to consider how your child does in a competitive environment. And I'm not talking sports. I'm talking academics. If your child is already having anxiety at 7 years old, if they are already having nervous breakdowns or they're having stress attacks because they just are having trouble with their homework or because they're struggling during class time, maybe they don't ask a lot of questions, you want to consider what type of environment would be best for them. In that case, maybe a Montessori's type environment is something that they would flourish in, whereas other kids would not do so well in such an open, free-thinking environment. You definitely want to consider the social and emotional needs of your students and your children. You don't ever want to place your child in a school simply for status. You don't want to pick a school because it's simply located in a better school district, or it's because it's in a better part of town, or just because it is something that you can talk about or brag about. That is not going to do your child any favors. Sit down with your kids, especially if they're older. Sit down with your middle schooler. Sit down with your high schooler. Sit down with your first or second grader. Talk to them about what they're looking for in a school. What do they want? Then start doing your research about finding a good fit for your child. Before you even pick a school, you need to visit it. Please, please go to the school. And I know during these COVID times, it's such a funky time. And some schools are not allowing tours or things like that. You can do a Zoom phone call or a face-to-face online. There's different ways that you can work around this. Every principal should be able to make an appointment with you if you are considering sending your kid to their school. If you ever contact a principal and they do not have time to sit down with you, that is not a school that I want you to be seriously looking at attending. There is no hiding behind success. Everybody wants students to succeed, but we want to do it in the best environment that the student can work through. So we want to keep in mind that the best environment is the best environment that they choose. When you're considering sending your kid to a new school or a different program, please talk to them. Ask them how they feel about it, because what they think or what they might know is best for them is maybe not what you're thinking. And I could say the same exact opposite. Sometimes as parents, we do know what is best for our kids and they have no idea. Just keep in mind that you need to have that conversation with your kids and keep an open mind with what they say. You might be really shocked at something that comes out of their mouth. I know kids who played sports forever and ever and ever. And when it came time to actually choosing a school, a college, or a high school based around that sport, they actually told their parents they didn't want to do it. They were getting burned out. They didn't have enough time for their friends. They didn't have enough time to actually focus on what they wanted to do for the rest of their life. Not that when we go to college, we really know what we want to do with the rest of our lives, but they barely had any time to think about it. Have a conversation with your kids. Have them heavily involved in the decision-making process. A second thing that I'm going to say really affects the success of your student in a school, and this actually should have been number one, is the relationship that your child has with their teacher. The bottom line, if your child does not form a relationship with the teacher, if the teacher does not form a relationship with your child, it's not going to be a good fit. For all of the teachers and administrators who are listening out there, don't ever underestimate the impact that you make simply by creating a relationship with your students, a professional relationship with your students. It can make all the difference. It is an integral part of the learning process. Think about, as administrators, think about the relationships that you form with your teachers. When you have expectations, you know that forming that trusting relationship with an open line of communication is going to help you go further, and your school's growth is going to go further. It is so imperative that we form relationships with our students. And parents, this is where you come in, where it's so important to form relationships with your kids. You have to know your kid. You have to know your kid. You have to know how they learn. You have to know what they love learning. You have to know why they're learning what they're learning and why they are so intrigued by it. These are all of the things that are going to help you choose the right school for your kid, and together. Also, you can ask your child's teacher right now, do you think that there is a different learning environment that they would benefit from? And I guarantee you, teachers will tell you, I really think that this is the best environment for them. We just maybe need to get them some more support. Or, yes, you know, what we have at this school, as much as I enjoy working here and I love teaching here, this is something that our school cannot provide for your child, and I have a recommendation for you. So keep all of these things in mind. Conversation, conversation, conversation. It's all about having a conversation with your child, really following them on their academic journey, being heavily involved, being an active member of that academic journey, and knowing how they learn. And then also knowing that they have a relationship with their teacher. Whatever form of communication they have, keep that line of communication going. You know, check in on your child's teacher. Teachers have mental health too. And it's so important, especially during this time, that we're checking in on teachers. They also have a lot going on, but I know that they would give you the time to answer the questions that you have about your child's academic success. The last thing that I do want to mention here that I most likely will be discussing in a further episode of Talk with Erin Stock is, please do not make your decision about a school based off of standardized test scores. I really want you to do some research about the school before you base what school your child goes to off of that score. Schools are so much more than a test score. Kids are so much more than a test score. Teachers are so much more than a test score. That is not something that I want you to fully base your decision on. Yes, they can sometimes make a difference when it comes to deciding which school may be better. But again, you're looking for those relationships that teachers build with their students. If those relationships are good, then success is almost guaranteed. There are so many things that go into that standardized test score and all those scores that get released, and they don't show growth. You could have a school who scores really high on their test scores year after year after year. And you could have another school who's not scoring as high. But perhaps this year, they actually made a substantial amount of growth in their test scores. If you're looking at a school where they just have consistently high scores, take a look at the growth. How much higher are they this year than last year? Is there a vast difference, or is it pretty much close to the same? If it's close to the same, you're not seeing a whole lot of growth in the kids. You're seeing success, and you're seeing them meet the standard, but you're not seeing a whole lot of growth. If you look at a school who may have low to average test scores, maybe from last year to this year, keep in mind that if they had a substantial amount of growth, they've obviously got highly qualified teachers teaching their kids. They've got parents who are involved in their child's education. They have support for their students, and they're probably offering programs for enrichment. So please keep in mind that it's not always about just that test score, but it has so much to do with growth. A lot of school districts are now looking at moving from a standard report card, a letter grade report card, to showing growth because it determines the success of the students much more than just a letter grade. So please do not simply decide to send your child to a school or not based off of a general test score. I know that I kind of went through everything fast, and this is a learning process for me. With this being my first episode, I just am incredibly grateful that you are here, you are listening, and I'm sure I'll do a follow-up to this episode several months down the line because I'll come back and say, I know I should have done it this way, I know I should have said it this way, or because I got lots of questions. Please, if you do have a question for me, I would love to hear it. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Instagram, both at Talk with Erin Stock. I just want to thank you for being here on this journey with me. Thank you for your partnership and your willingness to keep kids at the core of learning. Until next time. If you enjoyed this episode and think that somebody else might enjoy it too, please feel free to share it. Also, just like students, teachers love gold stars too. If you wouldn't mind leaving me a gold star review on whatever platform you're listening in on, I would really appreciate your support.
Thank you for listening to Talk with Erin Stock. Bye. See you next time.